Today is the 27th Kabbalah class, Baruch Hashem. And this is a Hakel year, a year when any time groups of Jews get together, it's a time for ability for inspiration. And this class is given in memory of my father, Olam Shalom. We're dealing with the letter Ches, and this is part two. And it's pretty amazing that a letter like Ches could have so much to it. But as we shall see, it does. So let's take a look at the handout that we have. And we should all have near us the Esses Sefirot, because we're going to deal with it quite a bit. Very, very quick review on some of the things we said last week so that we can continue. One is we said the letter Chet, according to the Arizal, is made up of a Vav and a Zayin, with this cap on top. And according to previous authorities, it's a Zion, two Zions, which we're going to talk about later today. So right now, what is the meaning of the letter Chet? Is a Vav and a Zion? It's Rotzli Veshuv. It is yearning, it's a surge, and return. What does that mean? So we take a look at the letter Zion, which we learned about a few weeks ago. It starts from the bottom up, so that is represents us reaching for God. And then we have the divine light, which comes down, that's represented by the letter Vav. And sometimes a person can, through their freedom of choice, decide on their own to reach to God. Sometimes it can begin actually with a bolt of inspiration, we don't know where it comes from, and we reach up, and that makes us again susceptible to the light coming down. So it's sort of circular that way. And also another aspect, that as we reach for spirituality, we need to know that ultimately the purpose is to be down here. Now, one of the things that I intended to mention last week and didn't get to is when we spoke about the translation of the letter Chet. So it has different translations. The first one that we mentioned last week was Chet is from the word Chayut, which means life. So what could be more alive and more spiritual than that? And the other one is from Chet Taf, which means to break or to demolish or terror. And we see two opposites come together like that, because life is whole and we break things, it's the opposite. And certainly spiritually speaking, there's one God, and divisiveness is the absence of godliness. So let's take a look at a very interesting word in a verse. And this is the story, we mentioned it last week, that after Shimon and Levi slew the inhabitants of Shechem. So then the verse tells us, Vayihi chitat Elokim al ha'arim, that on the cities around, God made there should be a certain dread over them so that they should not go to war with Yaakov. So on a very basic level, so here in this particular incident, we see that the dread that overtook those cities was for a positive. Normally dread is not something we look forward to. And this is really where the letter Chet is heading, and we're going to see it in an even more profound way than we saw last week. And one of the ways this is exemplified is that there is certain practice that has been the custom of Chabad Hasidim for a long, long time, and it's called Chitat. Chitat. Well, Chitat means dread. So what does that mean? Remember, Chitat, in this case, Chet Taf represents dread against the forces of evil. In other words, by fulfilling Chitat, which I'm going to explain in a minute, we therefore negate otherwise negative forces that would come our way. And what is Chitat? It's an abbreviation. Chet is for Chumash, Taf is for Tehillim, and the second Taf is for Tanya, as you can see it in the handout. So how does that work? The practice is to study every single day the Torah portion of that day. So today is Thursday. So we would study from the Torah portion of Matot Mas'ei as they come together, which is how it is this year, the fifth Aliyah. The fifth Aliyah, that's what we would study today with Rashi. Tehillim is divided by the days of the month. So today, which is Chavtet, it is the 29th of the Hebrew month, of Tammuz. So we would recite that Tehillim today. Now, it just so happens that tomorrow is the first of Av, so we recite the 29th and 30th day of the book of Tehillim. So thus far, we have a division according to the week Chumash, a division according to the month Tehillim, and then we have a division according to the year. The previous Rebbe took the Tanya, the entirety of it, and really it's five books, and he divided it up for one segment per day of the year for study. And there's two such calendars, one for a leap year, which we are this year, and one for a regular year. So a person studies a little piece of Tanya every single day. So the idea is, Vayihi chitat Elohim, that the dread of God was on those who would otherwise have attacked Yaakov. So by studying the daily portion, the monthly portion of Tehillim recited, and studying the annual portion of Tanya for the day, we bring upon us that dread to keep away the force of darkness. You should know that you can go on our website, and under Everything Jewish, in the banner, it says Daily Study. You go to Daily Study, and you have all of what I'm saying here available in print and in audio, and in print with explanation, if you wish, that's extensive or not. And same goes for audio. So it's pretty amazing what's available. And so that is that.
Is dread stronger?
What I'd like to do now is go further down on the page of the handout. And I have the verse that says, V'hachayut rotsu v'shov. And the chayut means the holy beast, which refers to types of angels. They were surging and returning. We spoke about that last week and also in the review. But what I want to go now to is what I had on the handout and mentioned it only briefly. And we're going to go into it in more length now. The difference between a chet and a hey, as it relates to matzah and chometz, which as a result will explain itself in very, very many areas. So look at what I've done on this line in the handout, and I've put a letter chet, a space, mem tzadik, a space, and then a letter hey. Why would I do that? Because right there, that's right. Because if you cover up the last letter, then you get the word chametz, leavened, right? And if you cover up the first letter, you get matzah. So now, what is the difference between those two words? A little space. A little space at the top left of the letter he. It's not there in the chet, and it is there in the letter he. So this is something that we mentioned a bit last week. We're going to get into it in much more of a deeper and practical level. So in general, I'd like us to understand that Tzemach Tzedek points out every single one of the letters is in general terms divided into three parts. Now it happens to just sort of flip the page here, but there's part of every letter that is the Chabad, the intellectual element, turn over the page. There's part of the letter that's Chagat, which is the emotions. And there's a part of the letter that is the projecting the emotions, which is Nehi Netzach Hod Yesod. So now, the way they were supposed to be typed is, if I could just take another one to put next to it, is the way it's supposed to be typed is that the visual should represent the letter Chet. If you could look here for a second. the upper level of the letter Chet. In other words, we're going to bunch together the head of the Vav and the Zayin, or Zayin Zayin. We're going to bunch them together, and the projection, the Chatoteret, this projection, and make it like, just bring it together. Chochma bin Adat, that's the upper level of the letter Chet. The emotions, Chesed Gvura Tiferet, that is the right side, the Vav. And Netzach Od Yesod is the left side. You got that?
Yeah.
Now, we're going to give that meaning, and it's going to be actually foundational to what we're going to do. There is a verse that we say every Friday night when we say Shalom Aleichem, we welcome the angels, and it's called Eshet Chayel, the woman of excellence, or some people say the woman of valor. That is the last chapter of the book of Isaiah, and that chapter is the eulogy that Avraham Avinu, our forefather Abraham, said when Sarah passed away. It says in the Torah that he eulogized her, Lispod Lasara, he eulogized her, and that's what he said, Eshet Chayil, which we say on Friday night. In Eshet Chayil, we have find the verse, every single verse follows the letters of the alphabet. So we're finding this Kabbalistic concept going way back when, all the way to Avraham Avinu, that when you want to express something, that it goes through all of the force of creation, you follow the letters of the alphabet. So in the letter Pei, that verse begins with these words. It says, Piha Potcha Bechochma. She opens her mouth with wisdom. So, on a very basic level, you're talking about the woman of excellence. Okay. So Avraham Avinu is talking about Sarah. She opens her mouth with wisdom. The truth of the matter is that every woman and every feminine aspect of the world and the soul and the Jewish people all originate from the feminine forces of the spiritual world, which are represented, and please take a look now at the sheet of these ten sefirot, which we're going to use a lot today. It's represented by the sefirah, the level of malchut. What is malchut? Malchut, it says transmission. Malchut is majesty. Malchut is humility. We've spoken about it a lot, and we probably will continue to speak about it always. What is malchut? Malchut is expression. So let's talk about thought, speech, and action. Of those three, we're going to talk about speech. Because right now, the verse says that she opens her mouth with wisdom. So before we understand what it means, let's understand something. That Chochma is right there at the top. It's that spark of insight that pops into our head. And it makes its way all the way down until it comes into speech. So therefore, speech, the transmission, is actually a recipient of the Chochma that makes its way through all the Sefirot. So, in other words, when we talk about the level of Malchut, or we talk about any one of us speaking properly to transmit what is on our mind, what we're doing is we using the faculty of speech to strengthen and to utilize that intellectual spark of inspiration that came into our heads. So, Piha Potcha B'Chochma, so we'll translate it like this, please. That the Sefirah of Malchut, which we now know refers to anything and everyone that is feminine, opens her mouth with Chochma. And now let's take a look at the letter He. The letter He, we said, the upper level, just like the letter Chet, the upper level, the horizontal, represents the intellect. The right foot represents the emotions, and the left foot represents the projecting emotions. Projecting emotions is Netzach Hod Yesod, and we're going to be talking about one of them today a lot. So why is the space there? The space there is to point out that through the faculty of speech, a person can strengthen what is in their mind. So, for example, there are people who recite affirmations. Why do they do that? Very simple. Because our sages tell us, kol mo'orer hakavana, that the voice arouses focus or arouses intent. So we all know very well that sometimes we have an idea in our head, and if we say it out loud, it will concretize it. Because let's take a look at the word matzah. What is matzah? Matzah is something that is non-leavened. So, let's flip to the letter chet for a minute. And let's look at the letter chet. So we have a right and a left and a cap, and we have a gaping hole at the bottom. This represents that if not everything is square, exactly right, then things can go wrong. You can fall through the bottom. Right? So there's tons of examples like that. All it takes is a screw loose and one of the Apollos couldn't fly. And many other such examples. But the possibility of improving, that comes about when you have a side entrance, and that is the space on the letter He. Now this, a lot of this we said last week, but now we're going to go into it deeper. Because let's take a look at the word chametz. What is chametz? Chametz is that which is leavened, that it rises. So we can describe rising as follows. Ego inflation. Because you say, like, he's full of hot air. That's exactly what it is. That's what chametz is. So in other words, if you're not totally everything the way it's supposed to be, you can fall through the bottom. Falling through the bottom means your ego inflates. What's the response to that? Change the chet to the letter he, which means you, if you have an idea of how to improve, you could speak it out and you can return. So now let's take a look at the word from the verse potcha, piho, her mouth, which ends in the letter he, potcha, which also ends in the letter he, and bechokhma also ends in the letter he. But potcha has a chet in there, as does the word chokhma, and we can break up the word potcha to petach he. Petach means opening. Hey, of the letter hey. You see that? She opens her mouth with chokhmah. So now what we're going to do is we are going to turn the page and we're going to introduce a new concept, but it is really critical for it to be right here. So here on the second side of the handout, we have, in English it says inadvertent misuse, which is a paraphrasing the best I could do. I had spent quite a bit of time with a thesaurus, because I'll tell you how it translates literally. Yenikat hachitzonim. So yenika means to suck, as in, let's say, a nursing child, or yenika, something to suck. And hachitzonim means the
extremes.
Not extremes in this case. That would be kitzonim. But chitzonim in this case means, I'm going to say the word pariah. Because really, chitzonim means external, right?
Yeah.
But that's not a good use here, because chutz, the root word chutz, means outside. But here we're talking about the pariah. In other words, somebody who's on the outside and unwanted. So Yinichat hachitzonim means that unwanted forces, the forces of darkness, find a way to suck life from places that they shouldn't, from places of holiness, which I have paraphrased, at least currently to the best of my ability, what I came up with, inadvertent misuse, and I'd like to give an example. And I'm going to use a number of practical life examples, because I want to say, especially in the open society or society we live in today, this is one of the greatest issues
And here it is. So we like to be an open society, an honest, and that relates to let it all hang out. Okay? The whole notion, let it all hang out. Sort of a whole hodgepodge of, just everything in its natural state. So let's say, for example, a woman becomes pregnant. She's, let's say, 3 months pregnant. So she's obviously not showing. And she has a little kid. And the little kid is, let's say, 7 years old. As you know, mommy's pregnant. I have a baby in my tummy. You're going to have either a brother or a sister. And it sounds wonderful. But I say to you, this is my personal opinion. I say that's a very dangerous thing to do. Why is that a dangerous thing to do? Because either 1 in 3 or 1 in 4, I'm not sure what the number is, there is a miscarriage. So now you told your little kid that you're pregnant, or maybe you told them right after you got the pregnancy test. So now for months and months and on, and now there's a miscarriage. So aside from everything that miscarriage can do to a woman, not only physically, but if it's late enough, you have a little body to bury. Okay? So now you have this little kid, 7 years old, 8 years old, 6 years old. And now what are you going to do? You're going to explain to them that little potential baby brother or baby sister, or if you had ultrasound and you knew which one it was, and you said, oh, your little brother, they died. So now crawl inside the head of a little kid. What are you doing? What are you doing with that kind of trauma that they don't even... In other words, just in your desire to be open, you've caused yenikat hachitzonim, the possibility that some great negative will come out. Now, nobody has to agree with the example that I gave. But I am giving that example nevertheless, because to me, just looking at human nature, I think it's a terrible thing. And I think it's one of the great, this concept comes from all this openness that we have. All right, a man and woman, they get married, and when they get married, they have a certain type of relationship. Do you really have to let it all be known to your children? Right? So that's one type of example. Another example, let's take something, for example, within Jewish law. Okay. So I can tell you that there's a certain ruling within Jewish law relating to the use of gas stoves on Yom Tov, meaning not Shabbat, but on Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, when it's not Shabbat, in relationship to whether one can adjust the flame and under which circumstances, which you can adjust the flame under certain circumstances. So, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and just to make sure that we know, Rav Moshe Feinstein, he passed away maybe 20 years ago, and he was really amongst the greatest halachic authorities of contemporary law in the 20th century. And very many of the things that we live by, the Jewish people live by today, is only because of his rulings. I'm not saying that every single ruling he had is followed. I mean, even in the Talmud, there's people who we sometimes follow, sometimes we don't, and Maimonides and all sorts of, all of them. But with Rav Moshe, he was on that level. So I want to say to you that I was listening to a class, a particular piece of Talmud, and in this class, the fellow says, in a particular Rashi, commentator on the side, he says, based on this Rashi, Rav Moshe ruled such and such in relationship to the use of a gas stove on Yom Tov, but he did not want to publicize it. Why not? Why not? Have an intellectual debate. See, if anybody's not afraid of intellectual debate, it's somebody like him, because all of his responses and the arguments back and forth, they're published in, I think it's 9 volumes or something like that. And many times he had great people who argued with him, and he published the back and forth, as did other people of his stature. So he certainly has no fear of that. And even when everybody disagreed with him, for example, he's of the opinion that in New York, midday is always, I think, 11:57 or something like that. And it's not changing with the position of the earth in relationship to the sun. Now, I don't know, nobody else agrees with him, but he was very, you know, back and forth, so he's not afraid of that. Why did he not publicize this ruling that I just mentioned? Because he felt that people would misuse his ruling, yenikat hachitzonim, inadvertent misuse, right? So I've given you one example from regular daily living having to do, in my opinion, about human nature. I've got another example to do with Jewish law. And now I'll give another example with spirituality. So the thing is, by basic halacha, there are certain instances where you can make the flame bigger. But if it's going to burn what's on the stove, then you can make it lower. In other words, you're doing it right. But he had an additional ruling that I'm not going to mention for the very reason that he didn't publicize it. So who am I to... to oppose what he said. But so now let's use a spiritual example. And I think the greatest spiritual example we could use is what we are doing here right now. What are we doing? We are learning Kabbalah. And Kabbalah is called, if you recall, we used to have it in the very first handouts. There's four sections to the Torah. Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod, Pardesh, remember the orchard. And the last letter, Samach, Sod, means secret. Because for millennia, this was only taught to select people. 500 years ago, along came the Arizal, who died before he was 40, mind you. Before he was 40, I believe he was 36, if I'm not mistaken, or 38 when he died.
38,
there you go, look at that, somebody who knows. And always, it makes me feel so good, I gotta tell you, it really does. And he said, mitzvah legalis zeis hachokhma, it's a mitzvah to reveal this wisdom. So now we have a problem. What is the problem? That because in today's day and age, with all the forms of printing and publicity and the internet, and even before the internet, you have people who will come along and say, oh, many people are looking for spirituality. Let me open up a Kabbalah center. Open to Jewish people, to non-Jewish people. We'll sell all sorts of products. And there's many people who misuse Kabbalah that way. Very many. So just to save my legal behind, if you don't mind, I don't want to say too much. But the point is that Kabbalah is a perfect example of inadvertent misuse. On the one hand, we need the spirituality it provides in order to survive. Just let's go back in history for a second. When did the Arizal emerge and say we need to publicize this wisdom? Right after the expulsion from Spain. All of the Jewish people were just reeling the same way in our lifetime the entire Jewish people were reeling from the Holocaust. Same thing. And the same thing, 1648, 1649, the Khmelnytsky pogroms, and the Jewish people were reeling exactly the same way. Along came the Baal Shem Tov, with more spreading of the wellsprings of the sod, the secrets, the mystical side. And our Rebbe, although I have no prophet who told me this, but just a fact is, he was born in 1902, living through the entire 20th century, passing away at 1994, so right after the Holocaust, using this on an even greater level of exposure, the first one to instantly make use of technology the moment it came out, whether it from was LPs in 1960, all the way to fax machines and cable television, internet came out later, and so on and so forth. So on the one hand, it's all this wisdom is pouring, And then on the other hand, you have all this inadvertent misuse. There was a time when you could buy red Kabbalah strings to tie around your waist in Walmart, your wrist in Walmart. Right? You understand what I'm saying? And you have a certain individual who doesn't know how to spell the word modesty, who's into Kabbalah. You understand what I'm saying? So that's called Yunikat HaChitzon. So I've given three very separate examples, and it's very, very important all the time. All the time we need to be very, very careful with this, and this relates to the letter Chet, as we shall see very soon. So now the question becomes, since I have just implied forcefully that many times you need to be quiet about certain things to prevent yinikat hachitzonim, the inadvertent misuse, how come all this mystical teachings is being so public? The answer is as follows. I'll tell you a story that happened with the Alter Rebbe. When the Alter Rebbe was a student of the Maggid of Mezrich, he was the youngest of the students, and I believe this happened with the one, he's called the Baal HaHafla. I forgot his name, I think his last name was Epstein, I don't remember. But he wrote a certain book that's used in all the yeshivas called the Hafla, it's on the Talmud. But he was also one of the great students of the Maggid of Mezrich. It was either him or another one of the great ones. Anyway, what happened was, in those days, this is way before plumbing, so the people had outhouses. That's just how people lived. So in other words, doing what you needed to do is a whole procedure. Anyway, on the way back from the outhouse, he sees a piece of paper with some Hasidic ideas on it, and they had fallen on the ground. And he was very disturbed by it, because the teachings of Hasidus are so holy, how could they be publicized and fall on the ground? Talking about inadvertent misuse. When he came, you know, to wherever they held the water, and he started washing his hands, and he's reciting the blessing, which is on page 6 in our Siddur, in which we thank the Almighty for the inner workings of our body, an amazing blessing, parenthetically, for anybody to study and to recite. So the Baal Shem, so the Alter Rebbe sensed that there's something very dark here. And he sensed that he was very concerned about something, even though this chassid didn't say to the Alter Rebbe what it was. The Alter Rebbe got us just a sense, a perception of what it was, and he starts telling him this story that I'm telling you, all the while this individual is reciting that blessing, which is not the shortest blessing. And here's the story. Because in Hebrew you can say it in a few words, but in English it takes a bit more. So let's say you have a king. And this king had a prince who's not well. So now what are we going to do? So you bring in the best doctors, of course, and they're looking for the best remedy. So finally, as they're looking for the best remedy, this son is getting so deathly ill, one of the doctors says that I know what we need to do. We need to find a certain stone. We need to pulverize it and mix it with water. And we need to pour this mixture into his throat. And this will help him. And I just want to give an example of it, just because we had it here actually with Ishmael, just passed away. Because this, to me, is such a graphic, I don't know if I'll ever forget this. Remember Yishmael, he was in hospital for a while. He came to shul, we gave him an aliyah, and then he started losing it. Do you remember, were you here in shul? And what happened was, and I'm standing right next to him, and the doctor, I don't want to say his name, but the doctor who understood what he needs to eat, says he needs some fruit juice or something like that. So he gave him some juice and a few spoons from it. As soon as he got into his throat, it's like he opened his eyes. And it was like it was sounded like a revival of the dead. I mean, he wasn't dead, but I'm just saying, it was like, wow. So coming back to this story. So this is what the fellow is saying. And he says to the doctor that, I don't know where we find this stone. The king says, I know where we find that stone. There's only one that we can get, but it happens to be the central stone in my crown. Right? Central stone in my crown. So what shall I do? So the doctor says to him, it's either your crown or your son. Not both. You want to save your son? Then you have to ruin the crown. Pulverize it. And you realize that when you do that, some of that liquid is going to dribble out his mouth. He's not going to take it in. All you want is that little bit to go in to revive him. And that's what the king does. So the Alter Rebbe is giving this example that this is what the teachings of Chassidus is. The Jewish people are in such a state of fainting that we got to take the king's crown, the deepest wisdom. I mean, what are we talking about in these Kabbalah classes? What is Kabbalah talking about? It's all talking about the divine energy, the divine God, and how it comes down into this world. And even though there's a possibility of inadvertent misuse, we have no longer any choice. You see, why was it kept secret all these years? For exactly that reason. That you shouldn't have people misusing the mystical teachings. But when it came to when the Jews were expelled from Spain, that was the largest congregation of Jews in the world until that point for many, many years, and they had what's called the Golden Age of Spain. I mean, the whole history lesson. And it was like Poland. Like Poland, the Jews had been there for 1,000 years, and 10% of the Polish population were Jewish. And the same thing with the 1648, 1649, or Tach V'Tat, as it's known in Hebrew. The Jewish people were just... And how many times did we hear from people, how could I believe in God? How could I go to shul if there's a Holocaust? I mean, why should I put on film the Holocaust? I mean, I heard it my whole childhood. So it comes to times like this, which one is it going to be? Are we going to keep God's crown, the stone, the key stone in God's crown, clean from inadvertent misuse? Or are we going to save his Jewish people, his child, right? So that explains why sometimes you have no choice, but you have to be very, very careful of Yinikat HaChitzonim. So now that we have explained Yinikat HaChitzonim, let's take a look at the 10 Sefirot and see where within the human psyche does that happen, so that we can know where to be careful. Okay, so let's run through very quickly the 10 Sefirot. It's definitely not in the three that are called intellect. And if you look at the side, I have a word written sideways, intellect. Why is it not in the intellect? Simple. Because intellect, if it's honest, is going to be truthful. Intellect is totally emotionless. There's no emotion. It's just right or wrong. Give me a break. It's either it adds up or it doesn't. So it's not going to be there. The next three in the human psyche is how I feel. So the concern that others will take what I feel the wrong way, well, it's within me. It doesn't relate to any external forces getting it wrong. But let's take a look at the next three. The next three are conveying emotion. That's what I call them. Why is that? Because in the next three, it's when we need to size up who we're going to communicate with and how we're going to do it. And in doing so, we have two parts of a pair that come together. On the one hand, you have Netzach, which is enduring, unstoppable. In other words, the projection forward. Now, taken on its own, is that I don't care who's on the other end. But that doesn't work in most cases. You need to have that balanced with Hod. What is Hod? Hod is appreciation, acknowledgement, submission, other person conscientiousness. That's really what I'm getting to. So now, let's think about Hod for a second, because Hod, on the one hand, is so important and Hod can be the culprit of Yinikata Chitzonim. How so? Because what is Hod? I think about the other person. So for example, somebody needs help with such and such a problem. Financial problem, emotional problem, whatever it is. What I could do is I can think so much about their condition, I say, you know what? Let me help them out. Now, sounds good. But if I'm always running to their aid, I become their crutch, their band-aid. So what have I done? I have crippled them. And I'm going to say a word that relates to politics in the Western world, not to promote any party. I'm saying this, and I feel I can, because this is based on personal life experience as a rabbi, and people will come to any rabbi and give them their, you know, very deep and sometimes dark secrets and spill out their heart, and you try to be helpful. And I'm going to tell you something that has troubled me very, very greatly. And it comes exactly to this. Because I certainly understand the need to help, and it's something that we do all the time. But when do we keep giving a person fish versus teaching them how to fish? In other words, if I'm always, and I'll use these words, if I'm always going to be the source of welfare, then there's no motivation to change oneself. And what do you have? The generational welfare. And that is a crime to humanity. I'm not talking about Yiddishkeit anymore, just specifically. It's a crime to humanity to cripple a person by always giving them. So how do you make the balance? It is a moment-by-moment struggle. And I tell you, any person with a heart, which most of us have a heart, and if you're in the helping business, it actually can be torture sometimes. Do I help? How much do I help? Is this too much? Do I use tough love? You see, if you're the right kind of person, and you're into the sphere of Hod, you want to be appreciate the other person's situation, tough love becomes very difficult. And I can tell you that in my life experience, there have been a few people, I'm not saying this just to toot my own horn, because I feel this is a major point. We're learning about the letter Chet, and the letter Chet has this message as a critical component in the teachings of Kabbalah, in the teachings of Chassidus. It's not something that I had to adapt. It's right in there. I'm just using modern examples. But there's been a few people who have literally transitioned from, let's call it, being in the state of perpetual welfare recipient. And I'm using that both literally and figuratively, to become self-sufficient. And it's a journey of years and years. And very often it doesn't succeed. So my point here is, yes, I think that any governing body should have a situation where people are helped. But at some point, and the details, it's not my department to figure out the details, but there needs to be some kind of sunset clause, so to speak, that those who are able to pick themselves up, that the realities of the world will compel them to pick them up, instead of compelling them to watch television all day, drink beer, and throw this cigarette butt into the carpet of the rented house, etc., 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 you know? So, yeah. So now that we understand this, let us take a look at the letter Chet. So we're going to go to the first page of this handout. And for now, we're going to look at the letter Chet as it is a Vav and a Zayin, because in the letter Chet is a demonstration of the concern with the letter Chet and the solution. Here it is. Remember what we said. in every letter, which represents a certain flow, there will be a component that represents the intellect, Chochma bin Adat. That's, in this case, it's the upper part of the Chet. And the downflow, which is Chesed Gvura Tiferet. Let's think about Chesed Gvura Tiferet. That is emotions within myself. So what is in my mind is going down towards personal awareness, conscientiousness. But when I come to the next three, triplet. So then, since it's how I interact with someone else, it's reaching. Remember, what is the letter Zion? The letter Zion is reaching upward. It's the left axis. It's reaching out to someone else. And now, what did I say before? That with the letter Zion, we have a roof on top and a roof on both sides, and that it has to be perfect. What if it's not perfect? Then you have fallout. You see, it's possible for a person to be perfectly balanced on the left axis, but the danger zone is the Sphira of Hod. It's the middle of those three. Remember, Netzach is the surge forward to reaching out to the other person. Hod is to crawl into their headspace. Yesod is to be perfectly balanced and poised and eager to transmit. So in the case of a Hod, the letter Chet is rigid that way. Rigid meaning to say it represents doing it perfectly. But what if you don't do it perfectly? You're stuck. You have fallout through the bottom. So that's why when we started off translating the letter Chet, we had two opposites. We mentioned some of this earlier today. You had breaking, you had life, and then you have breaking and dread. It has the two opposites to it. Now you remember that we have the two axes, downflow, upflow, we have two opposites. That's the whole thing of the letter Chet. And in this case, if it's not perfectly balanced, we'll get into trouble. So therefore, Chet represents the possibility of Yinikat HaChitzonim. Now, let's take a look, still on the same first page of the handout. Let's take a look at the word Chametz. Chametz. Because Matz, Mem Tzadik. Now, there's something, I knew there was something I need to put on this handout. It was on last week's handout, but I didn't get to it. And I realized I forgot to put on this week's handout. How do you, if you take the Chet and put it after the Mem Tzadik, you know what you get? Metzach. Metzach is a forehead. Metzach in Hebrew is used for arrogance. For example, when we take in Yom Kippur, we ask God for forgiveness, and we go through the letters of the alphabet, and for the letter Ayin, Al Chet Shechatonu, it's Ba'azut Metzach. Azut, we know what azut means. It means chutzpah. Chutzpah became an English word. That's what azut is, audacity. But in classical Hebrew, we call it azut metzach. Because the forehead, in other words, hey, who cares about you? I'm going forward. And corresponding to this, the high priest wore a golden band upon which was engraved the words Kodesh Lashem, holy unto God. And the Talmud says, to atone for Azut Metzach, for audacity of the crown, I think is what you call it, the forehead of the Azut Metzach. Why is that? Because the tzitz, the word tzitz means to peer, P-E-E-R. The golden way of looking at others is the total opposite of audacity. In audacity, who cares about you? Who are you anyway? Right? So the word chet mem tzadik, if you rearrange it, mem tzadik chet becomes metzach. So what are we seeing? That from metzach you can have audacity, which is the same letters as chametz, which is haughtiness. But I've just given you the clue that it's possible to put a golden band on the forehead of audacity. And I'm going to share with you, which we're going to come to soon, that there were two specific things in the temple that were, that had to be chametz. How come? So we're going to get to that soon. But right now, let's take a look at matzah, humility. See, when you have the left axis with a break near the top, in addition to everything that it represents that we've said before. We spoke today about she opens her mouth with wisdom. We spoke a little bit about it last time. We've spoken in earlier weeks how the Gimel gives the Dalet a Yud and it becomes the letter Hey. So it's that same Yud on the left axis. Today, what we're saying now is the left axis is not so rigid. What do you mean, not so rigid? It means that if I make a mistake, I can repair. What did we say? That if I'm not perfect, if I'm not perfect, there could be a nikat achitzonim. There could be this negative fallout. But if we have the space, and the space represents that I can repair. So here's an example. Let's say I were to have told you the very first example that I gave, that based on a particular Rashi in the tractate of Shabbat, in the tractate of Shabbat, maybe it's something, I forgot already. It's one of the, either this year or last year I learned it. So Rav Moshe has a certain ruling concerning gas stoves and Yom Tov. And let's say I told you what it was. Then I realized, wait a second. You're going to get the wrong idea. So I can open my mouth next week and say, listen, we spoke about such and such. Don't you take it the wrong way. You'll remember that for many years in the winter, I used to repeat a certain thing. Remember we have the radiator, right? We have the radiator in the winter. And then when we pull out the tables for the kiddush, we move the radiator. But the radiator should be muktzeh. How could you move it? So very many times I explained why it would be permissible. Right? Because muktzeh, because of machmas kelish shemlachtel iser, a utensil that's for prohibited activity inside that radiator is a coil that's heating up the oil to give heat. If you need the space, you can move it. So why did I always explain it? Because if I didn't, everybody would go home and say, hey, the rabbi moves it. It's okay to move it on Shabbos. No, it's only okay. You see, with your mouth, you can repair what would otherwise have gone wrong. And I'm going to go even further. Because I gave another physical example. An example, for example, of telling a little child about that you pregnancy and all of that. Use that as an example. Sometimes we know that for the sake of peace, we can change the truth. That's what our sages tell us. Because if you always stay the square truth, what do you know about my wife? Oh, I know your wife hates you. I've just been telling you the truth, right? Nah, she's madly in love with you. Right? You see what I'm saying? You can use your mouth to repair. Okay. So, therefore, matzah is the letter hey, it's positive, it's humility. And chametz is leaven. But the letter chet still has a redeeming aspect to it. And what is that? Let's turn the page. And remember that chet, according to the Bet Yosef and authorities prior to the Arizal, maintained that a chet was two zions. So I have put... Just a second. What I'm sharing with you now is my understanding of what the Tzemach Tzedek says in Or HaTorah, the Torah portion of Yechi, page Tof Shin Mem Beis. And all he says... The chet relates to the sefira of Bino. What's Bino? Bino, remember, is development of an idea. And he says, being that the concept of freedom, remember last week we spoke about engraved, the chet engraved on the tablets, and our sages say don't read it as charut, but read it as cherut, freedom. He says freedom is relates to the level of bina, that's development, that's level number two on the sheet. Alma de osi, the world to come, kiyodua as is well known. And then he says these words, v'gam lihiyoto beit zayinin, and being that it is two zayins, that the letter chet is two zayins. You see, he's now mentioning the opinion prior to the Arizal, two zayins. And that's all he says. And I'm saying to myself, how does that work? He says a few other things, but and here's what I think it is. What is bina? Bina is on the left axis, and it's where I am reaching to comprehend and develop an idea. So what is the letter Zion? The letter Zion is me reaching up from the bottom upward, right? It's the left axis. Where in the left axis is there reaching that will always be right? That's in intellect. Remember, if the intellect is correct, look, one and one is two, whether you're tired or have a mood, or doesn't make a difference. One and one is two. That's it, right? So the intellect, it is what it is, and it has no emotions. It's always going to be correct. So now, if you take a look at the letter Chet, and now let us turn to the front page of the handout. And what did we say? The letter Chet. Remember how I said Potcha, right? Is Petach He. Yes? The letter Chet is also like a portal. The Peace Arch Portal. Think about it, right? The Peace Arch Portal, that's the letter Chet. Okay? And that's how they describe it, as a portal. So if it's two Zions, why two Zions? What's wrong with one Zion? Because anytime we break down an issue, we have you explain there's this angle and there's the other angle. And they're both part of the entire complex idea. So in that sense, the right side and the left side are projecting upward and they look the same, right? We have an idea and it has multiple components. So the right component, the left component, in other words, all of the diverse components are reaching upward to create a complete portal. And that represents Bina. Why is that a response to Yenikat HaChitzonim, the undesirable outcomes? Very simple. Because where do we go wrong? When we put our head far too deeply into the other person's situation, and we can lose our balance, and as I said before, I just feel compelled to repeat it, I'm not knocking it. It is a very difficult balance. That is definitely my experience. It's a very, very difficult balance. But if we can hearken back to the intellectual side of things, that's where we're going to find the answer. So here's something that I believe, and it troubles me, but I think it's true. So let's say, for example, you have a certain child, and you realize that there's certain lessons in life that he or she doesn't want to hear. So you come to the conclusion that the only real teacher is going to be the hard knocks school, the realities of life. So what's happened now? I've put my head into that child. I've tried everything that I could think of, and it's not going anywhere. So I go back to analysis. And when I come to analysis, I realize something that I really don't want to accept, because I don't want to see my kids suffer. I don't want to see my kids suffer. You see, if I stay in the place of Hod, I'm not going to let my kids suffer. But then I'm going to be a band-aid again. You see? But if I go back up the left axis to Bina and analyze it seriously, then I say to myself, look, the correct balance is, you've done all these things, it doesn't go anywhere. You now have to let the world teach the lesson. And I can tell you from experience, it works. It works. So therefore, just before I get to your question, so the letter Chet is both things. It's Vav Zayin and Zayin Zayin. And you know what's really so beautiful here? Because what did the Alter Rebbe do? The Alter Rebbe adjusted the script to try and bring together the Arizal and the Bet Yosef in one script. And now we examine the letter Chet, and we see in the letter Chet the Vav and the Zayin and the Zayin and the Zayin. We're seeing that Vav and Zayin means a lot of things, but there's something that needs to be corrected in it. And to correct it, you've got to have Zayin, Zayin. So the Alter Rebbe designs it in a way that it's both at the same time. So all of a sudden, it becomes absolutely beautiful, the mystical meaning of how the nuances that the Alter Rebbe polished in his formation of these letters. Now again, I want to say that the way I've explained the two Zayins is the way I understand what the Tzemach Tzedek is saying. I don't know where else to go for it, but it seems that this would sound right.